Okay, first of all, just to let you know, I'm recording this particular bit of out loud thinking using my cell phone's voice recorder as opposed to the previous two dissertations or whatever I recorded on my mini laptop's voice recorder. The difference being that the laptop recorder records in stereo, interestingly enough, if I just use the inbuilt mic. The problem with that is it means that the recordings tend to be much more data intensive, and so sending them from one device to another so that I can then do the editing and so forth is a little more cumbersome. Anyway, if you find quality differences that are of note and of consequence, please let me know. I was listening this morning to a podcast, the Making Sense podcast with Sam Harris, where he's talking to Richard Dawkins. Their conversations are always fun and interesting, because I like how both of them think. But it reminded me of a recent, mildly negative experience on Facebook, which, for Facebook means it wasn't all that bad at all. But anyway, I've gotten much less likely to get on Facebook. It depresses me terribly when I do. A lot, and that's the last thing I need. But I still do try to get on because there's a lot of people on there whom I sort of want to keep aware of, and I suppose it's nice to think that they're aware of me. I've over time become increasingly bad at interacting socially in any kind of direct way, including even the telephone. I don't do very well, partly because of my hearing, and makes the interacting on cell phones in particular. It's not that I can't follow conversations, I just find it trouble too, and it's irritating. Anyway, little bit of a tangent there. I was on Facebook, which I do only intermittently nowadays, and there's a couple of discussion groups that I follow more than anything else. I won't name the discussion group because I don't want to, cast any aspersions or cause any ill will. I like the idea of these discussion groups, even when they're fairly nonspecific, but whether it's science or just ideas, philosophy, it's a nice thought, but unfortunately, the nature of social media being what it is, it doesn't seem to tend to bring out the best in us. And not to sound elitist or anything like that, but because there are literally no barriers to entry, you get some, well, peculiar sometimes ideas and sometimes ill thought out ideas and sometimes ideas that people have gotten into their minds quite innocently and by innocently I don't mean just not guiltily, but meaning with every good intention, trying to achieve knowledge and learn about interesting and complicated subjects and improve their minds and understand deep things. And I have to be in favor of that. But unfortunately it exposes you sometimes to how much misinformation and misunderstanding there is out there. And in one particular interaction, someone in the discussion brought up something about evolution and clearly had this notion that, at least from this particular person's point of view, I don't even recall if it was the person was male or female, let alone cis, trans, or fluid, etc. The person said something about evolution having a tendency to want to expand or whatever. Anyway, then I made a comment, trying to clarify and also trying by some sort of pseudo-Socratic method to point out what I saw as an error of thinking, or at least an understanding. Maybe not an error of thinking, an error of fundamental understanding. I'm taking a long time to get to my point here, sorry. The idea that evolution has some kind of direction, some kind of purpose to it. A lot of people have that mistaken notion. They get that mistaken notion from various sources. A lot of times the whole march of progress, the Victorian notion that that evolution was there to produce humanity, that we are some kind of a pinnacle or whatever. Now, we are certainly a peak or an outlier in one sense in the evolutionary model in the production of our brains and our social structures. and our ability then to sort of fly the perch of evolution, to borrow a very nice term, and actually affect our own genes and our environment, and to change the ideas that we deal with on a much more rapid scale than evolution ever could, rather than natural selection ever could. Let me get back up a little bit here and be more general with terms. Evolution, in a broad sense, is just change over time. Any kind of change over time is an evolution. You can have an evolution of a mathematical function. You can have an evolution of a physical system. The evolution of the universe itself, that's not the same as biological evolution. And biological evolution was recognized to be true a long time ago, based on fossil evidence and so forth. Then when I say a long time ago, I mean on a human lifetime scale, not on a general human history scale, perhaps. But the notion of evolution via natural selection, Darwinian evolution, is much more precise and specific a notion, and it has very specific insights, understandings, descriptions. It's a physical process iterated in the biological world since the first replicators came into existence on Earth. But it doesn't have any directionality. It doesn't have a goal. And this person eventually came in response to something I asked, made a fairly pompous sounding claim that even the earliest microbe on Earth had, as you know, built into it, the desire to dominate the galaxy. Now, if they could have been speaking metaphorically, to be fair to them, I don't want to be unkind. If they're speaking metaphorically and just saying that in the fact of the existence of a replicator, a microbe, is implicit the possibility of an organism that would come to be capable of dominating and engineering at a galactic scale. Like I said, a beginning of infinity, sort of, to use David Deutsch's term. If that's the idea, then I could say that maybe it's a metaphor that's pushed a little too hard and lead to misunderstanding, but it's okay. But if they mean it literally, they're obviously missing the boat. Because the nature of evolution by natural selection is that there are replicators. Probably started out with some variation on RNA that interacted with its environment in a way to encourage protective things like cell membranes and phospholipid bilayers. Eventually, DNA came to be as a more stable replicator, but RNA was still interacting because it can make pseudo-enzymes. RNA can actually take different shapes. And over the course of many, many, many iterations, as RNA is capable of replication, making copies of itself, and then DNA as well, there are often errors in copying, even though it's got an inherent copyability. It's almost like, in a way, a crystal of sorts, but not a simple two-dimensional or three-dimensional crystal, maybe a four-dimensional crystal, if you will. But the variance caused by errors in replication also influenced the thing's tendency to replicate itself more or less effectively. And this is at a probabilistic timescale, at a statistical timescale. And if you want to, the statistics are on scales that we have a hard time truly comprehending. I mean, the statistics of the entire human race are tiny compared to the statistics involved in a tablespoon of water. I mean, you think about it, 18 grams of water is a mole of water, and that means it has 6.022 times 10 to the 23rd, meaning it's a 24-digit long number, molecules of water. That's the kind of scales we're talking about. The human species is on a scale of 8 times 10 to the 9th organisms. It's not small, but it's about 10 to the 14th. 1 over 10 to the 14th as large as just the molecules in a drop of water. So thinking of both the molecular scale and then the time scale involved of evolution, you have to take that into account when you're thinking about it, because it helps to ground you in what is possible and what can happen over time. We know after the fact what's possible because we see it. But the argument from incredulity, you know, that I can't see how evolution could have done this in the amount of time it's had, comes up. And when people bring that up, they've obviously just not thought about it clearly or carefully enough. The reason evolution seems to have a direction could be considered analogous to the tendency for, well, the classic example of diffusion. If you put a little drop of perfume in a corner of a large room, and it's a volatile enough perfume to gradually be evaporated, there's a tendency for the perfume molecules to eventually reach the far side of the room, the farthest point from their origin, say, and even farther if there's an open door. But that's not a goal. It's not a desire. It's not a drive in any kind of teleological sense. And this is one thing I always have a trouble with, is the use of teleology. And even good biologists, even Richard Dawkins himself, with many caveats and reminders, to his credit, will use language of teleology, i.e. of desire, of purpose, etc., to describe things because it's more concise. But I still think it's misleading, no matter what you do. Like saying that an electron wants to be at the lowest energy level in an atom, for instance. An electron in an excited state wants to drop down and give off a photon. I don't like that because it's misleading. It's sort of a parochial, solipsistic, narcissistic point of view, like saying that the universe does things because they want to. I prefer to use the term they tend to. So, in a world where molecules can interact and replicators can replicate to varying degrees and compete with each other for resources, forming many possible solutions to the problems of replication and persistence. One man made a mistake. He's not alone, by the way. Sorry, that was just me being self-indulgent. Stephen Jay Gould, I think, dealt with this concept of the directionality of evolution, the lack thereof, I should say, in his book Full House. It's the first time I really encountered the problem dealt with in a rigorous and pretty mathematical way. That made it very useful. He explained it sort of as a drunkard's walk, and this is something that's often used in discussing spread of variance, Gaussian distributions, and so forth. Over time, in any iterative random process, the tendency is for things to spread out farther and farther from the origin, all of the things being equal. Now, if your origin is bounded on one side, as it is in evolution, by which I mean there's only so simple a process, or there's only so simple a code, a genetic code, that can exist and still be self-replicating in the sense that it actually influences its own replication and engineers its own replication in any meaningful sense. It's some basic simple viruses are probably your far left wall there. I suppose you could have a snippet of DNA, maybe a four base pair sequence or a three base pair sequence could in principle replicate itself, but it couldn't really influence its own replication. Its replication would be more or less dependent upon being in an environment of replication already. So viruses are probably the quote-unquote simplest. You can't keep going in that direction. You can't get down below zero in this particular type of structure. But you can keep getting more complicated. As far as we know, there's probably no in principle upper limit to the degree of complexity. Although the longer a chain of replicators is, the more likely there are going to be errors in the replication. But, you know, evolution has caused various error correction mechanisms to be evolved as well. So, you know, that's something that can be dealt with. So over time, in a fairly short period of time, high complexity came about. That also required certain other things. For a degree of complexity of genotype, you had to also have then also a degree of complexity of organism. For that to happen required a lot of contingent events, including the production of free oxygen in our atmosphere thanks to photosynthesis, that led to the ability of multicellular life to come into existence. It's one of the things that led to it. So anyway, you're going to eventually get more complex things. And that didn't take terribly, you know, once the Cambrian explosion era had hit, we kind of had spread very far. And I say we meaning life, not we meaning humans. We'd spread a lot in the phase space of complexity. And probably that right end of the curve was wobbling back and forth quite a bit, but not really tending to get too much wider, because there are drawbacks to higher degrees of complexity. And then you can start doing a different curve of complexity of organism that isn't necessarily the exact analog of the complexity of the genotype. And you will tend, over time, to perhaps produce a nervous system such as the human nervous system that interacts in the human social system, that they may eventually invent external storage of knowledge, written language, which I consider to be the lifeblood of civilization, the photosynthetic production of oxygen equivalent that led to everything else, without which it wouldn't have happened. The ability to transmit knowledge and store it outside ourselves so that it could exceed our personal limitations and then produce its own evolutionary process in memetics, sort of Richard Dawkins coined the terminology there originally, and the notion. Anyway, the point I'm making is, yes, over time, life did go from simplest to having more and more complex things showing up. But in fact, life has always been modally protozoal. There's still more protozoal life forms than any other kind of life form. There's probably more massive protozoa than every other type of life form put together. So still, it has been, since it began, continues to be, and may always be until the end of life itself on Earth, the age of bacteria. And of course, once our brains and social structures reach the point where then we could make written language and increase our knowledge and our power and our success through agriculture, etc., that definitely changed the landscape. But there was nothing inherent in evolution that was guaranteed to produce us, and therefore then our tendency, which may come about to end up dominating the galaxy. Now, if you want to take one possible point of view from the many worlds hypothesis, that the existence of life may well imply that in at least some branches of the Everettian multiverse, it will survive and produce intelligent life and eventually dominate the galaxy. You could certainly say that, and probably from a mathematical point of view, if the Everettian branches are infinitely divisible, like the real number line, then it may trivially be true. But let's set that aside as a separate argument. The point I'm making is there was no clear tendency to produce intelligent life of the sort that we show. I mean, intelligent life, yes. You could say any organism with a nervous system that interacts with its environment and changes and moves is intelligent. It's not just moving by diffusion. It has locally goal-directed behavior. That doesn't make evolution goal-directed, however. And it's pretty clear that technological-level intelligence is a rarity. As far as we know, it's only happened once. As far as we know, it's only happened once in the universe, let alone, you know, on Earth. It could have happened elsewhere, don't get me wrong, I don't know. But there's by no means any implication that intelligent life is a tendency in biological evolution by natural selection. Again, the tendency is to keep making bacteria, the single dominating tendency. Other things are comparative trivia. Life came into existence very soon after it was possible on Earth. As soon as the Earth was cool enough and stable enough, we find evidence that there were replicators and even archaea, you know, early types of prokaryotes. Then it went a really long time, I think over 3 billion years, before multicellular life really came into existence in any kind of thing that we'd call it in the modern world. And then after that, for 500 million years, until finally, within the last 40 or 50,000 years, in a way, you might say the last 10,000 years, technologically intelligent life came into existence with external intelligence. That's not an obvious trend. We don't know that it would happen again if we reset the machine. If we were to wipe out civilization, there's no guarantee that technological civilization or the type of organism that we are would ever happen again. There may be lots of life in the galaxy, but based on the proportion of time on Earth in which technology has existed, it's entirely possible that none of the life in the galaxy has any kind of technological or even culturally sophisticated civilization, even if it's been around for a long time. It may be a real fluke that we happened. Certainly it appears to have been a fluke on Earth. So the notion that evolution is directed, that it was directed to produce us, that we are somehow inevitable, the product of some kind of goal-directed force, is a mistake. It's a misunderstanding. There's no evidence that such a thing is in existence. I've taken a long time to get to that point, didn't I? Yeah, it took longer doing this than I meant to, but I'll edit it down. Thank you.